I see how extremely religious you are in every way. I noticed that you have an altar to an unknown God. I'm here to tell you today that I know that God. You worship all sorts of deities and philosophies. You worship Zeus and Athena, Jupiter and Saturn and Venus, Neptune. You worship the gods of the Romans and the gods of the Greeks. You are so ecumenical, you even have an altar to an unknown God. I'm here to tell you that the creator of all that is, the creator of the universe, the creator of you and me, the creator of all life, is that unknown God. That which you worship and don't know it is the creator of all that is. An altar to an unknown God. Paul in Athens decided he would connect with the people who lived there by pointing out to them that they already had an altar to Yahweh, an altar to God. Even though they didn't know it, they already were seeking after the truth that is proclaimed in and through Jesus Christ, the truth of the gospel, the truth of the one eternal Creator God, the truth of God's love and grace and acceptance for the whole world. You may not have known it by name, you may not have known this Creator by name, but you nevertheless have an altar to the unknown God. And my friends, we Christians living nearly 2,000 years later, we Christians also have an altar to an unknown God. The church is often failing to recognize that unknown God. The church is often trying to define God, to reduce God to the distance between the ears of theologians. A narrow distance indeed, my friends. The church is constantly trying to say what God is and what God is not, and who God loves and who God does not love. The church is trying to define God and is continually failing. The church, and this is an indictment of all churches, is trying to control God. And God will not be controlled. An unknown God. This is a humbling moment for theologians because people like me, we had those degrees behind our names and spent years studying the Bible and years studying theologians like St. Augustine and Thomas Aquinas and John Wesley, and we spent long hours studying what they taught about God, and then we have to realize that in the end, we know nothing more about God than those Athenians knew. Not really. You ever swum in the ocean? Swim. Is that right? Swum. You ever dived in and swum around in the ocean? You know, when you're swimming, you're in the water, and you dive down a few feet, you're under the water, but you're just on the surface of the water. When I go out in the ocean on the ship is gliding over the surface of the waters. And sometimes in the heavy waves, she'll start to slam and parts of the ship will go underwater. And if, like me, you can't afford a nice cabin way high up, you have to be way down in steerage where you have a porthole and the ship slams and you look out the window and you don't see sky and birds, you see fish swimming along the side of the boat. You know, you're underwater for a little bit. Once I was in the Caribbean and I took what was called an Atlantis submarine dive and went down about 100 to 200 feet and looked at some coral developments and some shipwrecks off of the Cayman Islands, and I thought, wow, we're way underwater, we're 200 feet down, and 200 feet into the ocean ain't nothing, friends. barely scraping the surface. It's a humbling experience to jump out into the ocean, out in the middle of nowhere, and to swim around and realize how many hundreds and thousands of feet, how many miles there are between you and the bottom. That's humbling, my friends. Well, as a theologian, in truth, what we know about God, even what we know about God in Jesus Christ, is about like that first few feet at the top of an ocean. What's left? The mystery of the unknown God. What's left is beyond our grasp. You can't get it in this tiny little space, my friends. And you can go to school your entire life and never go deeper than just a few feet, metaphorically, into the ocean depths of understanding God. Jesus Christ revealed God to us. Revealed God to us in human form, was incarnate presence of God. He was the incarnate, in flesh, presence of God in this world. He was God poured out, as we've studied in Philippians. He was God poured out into human flesh. Like an offering is poured out on the altar, He was God poured out into human flesh. And still, it's just the first few feet. Maybe in Jesus, the first couple of hundred feet. But it's still just the surface of the depths, the infinite depths of the ocean of the divine. That's kind of what Paul was grasping at in the Acts of the Apostles. Here when he was speaking to the Athenians. You have gods for every possibility. Gods for the sky and gods for the moon and the stars and gods for the earth and gods for the ocean. You have gods for joy and gods for war. You got gods for sex. You got gods for everything. You even have a god for the unknown things. The depths of the unknown. And if we are honest, even with the revelation of Jesus Christ, who shows us and tells us all we need to know about God, even with the depths of Jesus Christ, the image of the invisible God, and that's an interesting phrase, image of the invisible God, even with Jesus Christ, we're only skimming the surface of the depths of God. Now think with me for just a minute. This neat little statue, this little carving, this beautiful olive wood carving of Jesus, the Good Shepherd, which I got in Bethlehem a couple of years ago when I was there. Beautiful, absolutely beautiful wood, beautiful artistry. Is this what Jesus looked like? We don't know. I mean, he was a guy. And most Jewish guys had beards. The law said you couldn't mar it, so you couldn't shave it. And he probably didn't cut his hair like we do, so he probably had long hair, but we don't know how much hair he had. All right, he might have been like me and suffered it, but he was only 30 or 33 years old, so he hadn't had a time to lose a whole lot. We don't know what he wore. We don't know what color his eyes were. We really don't know. We don't know. And yet you go to churches today in this city and around the world. You go to churches today and you'll find in white churches pictures of Jesus with blonde hair and blue eyes. You go to black churches and you'll find a black Jesus. You go to an Indian church, Native American church, you'll find a Native American Jesus. You go to an Indian church, you'll find an Indian Jesus. You go to a Korean church, you'll find a Korean Jesus. You go to a Japanese church, you'll find a Japanese Jesus. I've seen Japanese Madonna and Child. You go to a church in South and Central America, you'll find a South and Central American Jesus. We tend to depict Jesus after our own image. And that's not just something that everyday common folk do. That's something that the theologians do. There was a movement that began back in the 1990s called the Jesus Seminar Movement. Some of you may have heard of the Jesus Seminar Movement. A group of scholars got together and they decided they were going to determine what Jesus actually said from the Gospels, from the non-biblical Gospels. They were going to put it all together and find out what Jesus actually said. So they voted. If a passage was what Jesus said, they voted yes. They gave it a green marble. If the passage was something that Jesus absolutely did not say, they voted no. They gave it a red marble. And they said, if Jesus could have said it, but we don't know if he did or didn't, they gave it a yellow marble. And then they counted up all the greens, and they counted up all the reds, and they counted up all the yellows. And they said, the greens is what Jesus said, the reds is what he didn't say, and the yellow he might have said, but probably didn't. And of course, it was mostly reds. Some yellows and a very few little greens. And when you start to examine the picture of Jesus that they developed from this green, yellow, and red judgment on the passages of Scripture about what he said, when you start to examine the picture of Jesus that was generated by the Jesus Seminar scholars, you found out something very interesting. You see, most of those scholars were raised in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. They were part of the 1960s, especially the 1960s counterculture movement. Remember Timothy Leary? And most of them were part of that movement. And so the Jesus that they generated had long hair, wore tie-dye t-shirts, and was something of a hippie. Because they were something of a hippie. Yeah, sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? Is that Jesus? Not any more than Jesus with blonde hair and blue eyes, or an African Jesus, or an Indian Jesus. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. We can't create God in our image. We were created in God's image. But we are constantly trying to create God in our own image rather than acknowledging that what little we know, even in Jesus, is just the surface of the infinity of the depths of God. My friends, we too have an altar to an unknown God. And we can try to define God by a limited set of parameters all we want. Churches love doing that. When churches establish dogmas and creeds, that's what they're doing. And I'm a creedal kind of guy. I like those things. But I'm aware of the fact that when I do that, I start making God too small. When I try to define God, I start making God my possession. Think about it. The phrase even gives it away. My God. Your God? Your possession? Something that you hold on to and put in your pocket and carry around? Hey, here's God right here. Or one of my favorite cartoons shows this preacher with a leash and a bulldog. The bulldog has God written on it. That's God. Controlled by the preacher. We do that all the time. My God. As if God were our possession instead of the other way around. And we are God's children. And we are God's beloved possession. We're just swimming on the surface, friends, skimming the surface of the true depths of divinity. We worship at the altar of the unknown God. The world certainly doesn't know him. Do we? I mean, I was asked just the other day in an email, why do you believe in a God who sits on the throne and has a great big white long beard? My response back was, I don't. We even betray our own ignorance of God by the pronouns we use, like he, like she. God's not an it. But God is more than he or she. And God, revealed to us in and through Jesus, is very clearly the God who loves and accepts even those who don't understand or even accept him. So do we define God too closely? Yeah, we do. It's part of our human nature. It takes a bit of humility. And this is hard, friends, to realize that we swim on the surface. We've dived down just a little bit, just maybe a couple hundred feet in Jesus. And we're just barely scratching the surface of the infinite depths of the majesty, power, grace, love of God. Love of God is beyond our comprehension. I'm reminded of one of my favorite songs about the love of God. It's entitled, The Love of God. If we with ink the ocean fill, and were the sky of parchment made, every stalk on earth a quill, and every one a scribe by trade, to write the love of God above would drain the ocean dry, nor could that scroll contain the whole, though stretched from sky to sky. The depths of God are beyond our comprehension, especially the love of God, which we glimpse in and through the life, teachings, death, and resurrection of Jesus. Let's give thanks and praise that we worship a God who can't be confined by the narrow dogmas and doctrines of the church. Let's give thanks and praise that we worship a God whose name we know, Yahweh and Jesus Christ, whose name we know, but whose depths are unknowable in this life. Give thanks and praise to God, and let's worship together at the altar of the unknown God.
You have been listening to a sermon by Dr. Gregory Neal, Senior Pastor of St. Stephen United Methodist Church and Rector of Grace Incarnate Ministries. Copyright 2008 by Dr. Gregory S. Neal. All rights reserved. For more information or to listen to other sermons by Dr. Neal, visit us on the web at www.revneal.org. That's www.revneal.org. You are also invited to visit us in person at St. Stephen United Methodist Church, 2520 Oates Drive, Mesquite, Texas, 75150. This program was produced by Dr. Greg Neal.